Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, September 29th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
Hurricane Ian rips across Florida as one of the strongest storms ever to hit the U.S. mainland.
The pound resumes its fall as the U.K. holds firm on its fiscal plans.
U.S. futures slide, Treasury yields rise following yesterday's Wall Street rally.
And thousands of Amazon workers are getting raises.
The New York City Council is deciding whether to ban solitary confinement in jails. Plus, the U.S. Senate is ready to pass the bill that will keep the government open. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Aaron Judge hit his record-tying 61st home run in a Yankee win in Toronto. A big comeback win for the Mets.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are lower this morning. We are coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 44 points this morning. Dow futures down 326. And NASDAQ futures falling 162. DAX in Germany is down 1.7%. 10-year Treasury down 28.32, yield 3.84%. And the yield on the 2-year, 4.20%. Nathan.
All right, Karen, we'll have more on the markets in a minute, but we want to get you the latest on Hurricane Ian first. It crashed into Florida yesterday, bringing massive storm surge and knocking out power to more than 2 million homes and businesses. President Biden says the federal government stands ready to help.
That includes dispatching hundreds of FEMA personnel and activating thousands of National Guard members. I've also developed a search and rescue team and deployed them to multiple federal agencies, and they've already on the ground and ready to help.
President Biden is also urging Florida residents to follow all warnings from local officials. Ian has weakened since it hit land. It is now a tropical storm with top wind speeds currently around 65 miles per hour. Let's get more on the track now with Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolin.
Nathan, Karen, and Ian now affecting central and northeastern Florida. It is moving off towards the north and east this morning. It'll bring wind gusts over 60 miles an hour to portions of northeastern Florida. Now, the system is forecast to move out over the waters of the Atlantic, and it may actually regain some strength before moving back inland over Georgia and the Carolinas in the next 24 to 36 hours. Again, it continues to produce prodigious rainfall. We're expecting anywhere from 5 to 10 inches of rain north of the storm today, with additional rainfall into the weekend. Yesterday, it went ashore in southwestern Florida with winds of over 150 miles an hour and a storm surge that caused some historic flooding in the Naples area, also around Fort Myers, Fort Myers Beach, Bonita Beach. All those areas saw significant flooding. Nathan and Karen?
All right, Rob, thank you. And of course, we'll be checking in with Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolin throughout the morning right here on Bloomberg Radio. And now back to the volatile markets. We're seeing the pound snap a 2-day gain following that historic bond buying program from the Bank of England. We get the very latest live from London with Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. After yesterday's central bank-driven rally, UK stocks, sovereign bonds and the pound all lower this morning. Prime Minister Liz Truss today defending her government's huge fiscal stimulus package, blaming global economic pressures for the market fallout from her announcement last week. She says the tax cuts, the biggest in 50 years, are the right plan for the UK. Today's slide puts the pound on track for its worst month since Britain voted to leave the European Union more than 6 years ago. In London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. Former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Summers is weighing in on the turmoil in markets. He's welcoming intervention from the Bank of England, but says the U.K. is still facing serious issues.
I think it was the right thing to do, given the technical factors that had arisen in the market. And it's obviously brought some important stability to the gilt market. It does not resolve any of the fundamental contradictions in British policy.
Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers spoke with Bloomberg hours after the Bank of England pledged unlimited purchases of long-dated government bonds.
Well, Nathan, back here in the U.S., the White House is alarmed over the market turmoil triggered by the new U.K. Now it's encouraging Prime Minister Liz Truss to dial back her economic plans. We get details now from Bloomberg's Amy Morris from our 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The plunge in UK assets earlier this week contributed to declines in U.S. Treasuries. Sources tell Bloomberg News Treasury officials are concerned at the volatility in the markets, and they're working through the IMF to put more pressure on Truss's government. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen downplayed the turbulence, but Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo called Truss's approach of cutting taxes while increasing spending misguided. Truss's government argues its program will boost long-term growth. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Amy, thank you. We have some personnel news coming out of Washington. Sources say Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has told the White House she will stay past the November elections. Her desire to stay comes as the Biden administration prepares for potential cabinet and other senior personnel changes. Those decisions may depend on how well or poorly Democrats do in the elections.
Meantime, a House proposal to restrict stock trading by government officials has hit a snag, Nathan. The bill would curtail stock ownership and trading by members of Congress, the president, vice president, Supreme Court justices, and other high-ranking officials. But it's currently being held up by Democratic infighting. The bill's sponsors introduced the legislation yesterday, but multiple House officials familiar with discussions said any floor action on the measure has been shelved, at least for now. Lawmakers are scheduled to leave Washington this week until after the November election.
Now let's turn to geopolitics now, Karen. The U.S. wants to resume talks with China. Ambassador Nicholas Burns is calling on the nation to reopen discussions that were halted after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan.
We do not seek conflict, and we're going to try to compete with China vigorously and then work with China where we can. And we hope the Chinese will reciprocate. They've frozen a lot of our dialogues since Speaker Pelosi's visit. Our message to the Chinese is let's talk, open these dialogues, and let's move forward.
Ambassador Nicholas Burns spoke at the Milken Institute Asia Summit in Singapore. He says the U.S. needs to work with China on issues like climate change and health.
And in corporate news, Nathan, Amazon is boosting pay for hourly workers in the U.S. The online retailing giant said the move will raise the average starting wage for most frontline employees in warehousing and transportation to $19 an hour.
And Bloomberg Daybreak's brought to you by SEI. Asset managers don't get results that are off the charts when their solutions are off the shelf. Learn how SEI's operating platform can turn infrastructure into a competitive advantage at seic.com/tech. This is Bloomberg. And it's now 5:07 on Wall Street. We're seeing 20-minute delays on the New Jersey Transit Northeast Corridor, and it's 55 degrees in Central Park. Michael Barr has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The New York City Council is deciding whether to ban solitary confinement in jails. Demonstrators on both sides clashed on the steps of City Hall ahead of a hearing on the bill. Benny Boisico of the Correction Officers Benevolent Association says the notion that we're torturing individuals in our system is not the case. However, Democratic City Council member Tiffany Caban argued, we need to know what is the root of the violence. A New Jersey bank agreed to pay $13 million to resolve claims of discriminatory lending practices. Lakeland Bank has been ranked best bank in New Jersey, but U.S. Attorney Philip Selinger says that's not the case for people of color in at least three counties.
If you lived in a black or Hispanic neighborhood in these counties, you likely had little opportunity to apply for, let alone obtain, a mortgage from Lakeland Bank.
U.S. Attorney Philip Selinger said Lakeland Bank redlined these neighborhoods, refused to service them in violation of the Fair Housing Act. The U.S. Senate is ready to pass the bill that will keep the government open and spending until at least the middle of December. Democratic Representative Jim McGovern of Massachusetts thinks the government funding bill will pass by tomorrow.
We're going to do everything we can to make sure we don't have a government shutdown. Remember, the last time we had a government shutdown, the Republicans controlled the White House, the House, and the Senate. I mean, that was irresponsible. We would not do that. And the fact of the matter is there's a lot of stuff that I would like to see and a CR, and there's a lot of stuff, you know, that I would, you know, like to add on. And I know I can't get it past the Senate. So we have to do the best we can working with the people that we have to deal with.
Representative McGovern spoke on Sound On, which airs at 5 p.m. weekdays on Bloomberg. Both parties agreed to a temporary continuing spending bill that will include disaster aid for weather-battered Kentucky, Alabama, Texas, Alaska, and Puerto Rico. Vice President Kamala Harris is in South Korea. Harris met with the South Korean president to reinforce the U.S.-South Korean alliance.
For seven decades, the alliance between the United States and the Republic of Korea has been a linchpin of security and prosperity.
Vice President Harris later traveled to the demilitarized zone that separates North and South Korea. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Welcome to 510 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, Nathan. Perhaps you've heard Aaron Judge has been trying to hit his 61st home run of the season. Seven straight games where networks broke into programming to show his at-bats. His mother and Roger Maris' son crossed borders to watch his at-bats in Toronto. Seventh inning, Tim Mazza on the mound. John Sterling, WFAN.
The payoff. There goes the deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 61. He ties Roger Maris for the American League single season record with 61 home runs. It's a two-run Judgey in black.
Yeah, Yankee and American League record. Of course, the reason this has gotten so much attention, it's the so-called clean record. The only ones to hit more in a season. Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, all of their seasons tainted by steroid use. Judge has seven games left, trying to hit his 62nd. The outcome of the game, fairly meaningless. That's why Aaron Boone had Anthony Rizzo manage the game. Yankees beat the Blue Jays 8-3. Meanwhile, what a win for the Mets. This game, very meaningful as the Mets try to win the NL East. That means a bye, avoiding the Dodgers until the NLCS. They trailed Miami 4-0 seventh inning. Eduardo Escobar to the rescue. Two-run homer seventh inning. Game-tying two-run single in the eighth. Game-winning RBI hit in the tenth. Mets won 5-4 just as Atlanta lost in 10 innings in Washington. So the three-game series that begins tomorrow in Atlanta starts with the Mets one game ahead. Weather could be a real issue for the series, Saturday especially. Jets made it official. Zach Wilson will return from his knee injury and start Sunday in Pittsburgh. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. S&P futures are down 34 points. Dow futures down 247. NASDAQ futures down 128 points. The pound at 1.0821 against the dollar. We look at the market volatility next with Patrick Armstrong, Chief Investment Officer at Pluribee Wealth. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the New York Community Trust. Your name will live on as a champion of the causes you care about for years to come through a charitable bequest to the New York Community Trust. Learn more at philanthropist.nyc.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and risk-off sentiment is returning to markets as concerns about inflation and the risk of global recession overshadows the Bank of England's move to restore calm. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, right now S&P futures down 31 points, Dow futures down 224, NASDAQ futures down 117, and the DAX in Germany is down 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 29 32nds, yield 3.85%, the yield on the 2-year 4.20%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.25% or 21 cents at $81.94 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.9% or $15.20 at $16.54.80 an ounce. The euro 0.9680 against the dollar. British pound 1.0831 and the yen at 144.70. Looking at Bitcoin, it's down 0.7% at $19,400. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Hurricane Ian has left a path of destruction in southwest Florida, trapping people in flooded homes, damaging the roof of a hospital intensive care unit, and knocking out power to about 2 million people. Ian, now a tropical storm, is now aiming for the Atlantic coast. The Biden administration blasted Russia's attempt to legitimize its control of Ukrainian territories through what they're calling a staged vote to appear as if there is Russian loyalty in these towns. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Blue Jays 8-3, but more importantly, Aaron Judge hit his 61st home run, tying Roger Maris for the AL record. The Mets, Nationals, and Giants won. The Red Sox beat the Orioles 3-1. The A's lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 519. Levine on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined this morning by Patrick Armstrong, Chief Investment Officer at Plurimi Wealth, as we see a risk-off mood return to this market, particularly given the crisis happening in the UK. How deep is this crisis of confidence in Liz Truss's financial plan, Patrick?
I think you've seen it in the currency, you've seen it in the gilt market, and populist policies, which are basically promising things that you can't afford, worked very well when interest rates were zero. We're getting into an environment now where the Bank of England's going to be probably up to 5% in 2023. So promising unfunded tax cuts and promising spending, it just doesn't make sense anymore. And the market's reacting to that. So there's absolutely no confidence in these policies right now.
Is there contagion risk for the broader economy? Is there contagion risk for the U.S. market with what's happening in the U.K.?
Limited. There's some, but I don't think it's significant for the U.S. economy. The U.S. market is impacted by the overall global interest rate environment, and the Bank of England basically buying longer duration gilts seemed to push down treasury yields even yesterday a little bit. So what the U.K. does, it's pretty much it's bailing out its pension systems that basically have a lot of liabilities. They match with long duration gilts, and some of those gilts fell 30 to 50% in the last few days as higher long-term interest rates are now discounted in their prices.
Now we're seeing a lot of selling in benchmark and long dated U.S. treasuries this morning. What's driving that, do you think?
Well, you've got persistent inflation, you've got big debts, you've got deficits, and populism is still the policy that's working for most Western governments. So the UK is at an extreme, but I think all Western governments are at risk basically with their policies and spending a lot, not really wanting to increase taxes. Austerity never is mentioned anywhere. And I think higher yields are probably a consequence of that. That being said, I have closed my 10-year shorts on treasuries yesterday. So we've been short treasuries now for well over a year, and we did close them as they moved past 3.8. They got all the way up to 4% yields, but we've closed that position now because real yields are 1.6%. So that's very different from where we were a year ago when we had negative real yields of 1%.
Yeah, we have the 10-year yield right now is sitting at 3.85. As you mentioned, it did breach 4% earlier this week. Where do you see U.S. Treasury yields headed at this point now that you've covered that short?
Yeah, I actually think it's going to – I wouldn't be surprised if it does gravitate up towards 4%. But I think the bulk of the move has happened now. So I wouldn't be surprised if yields do move higher from here, but I don't think you're going to have the sharp move that we've had. You are being compensated with returns above inflation to invest in treasuries now. And for years now, the only buyer of treasuries has been the Fed selling treasuries. But I think at real yields where they are now, you will be enticing natural investment demand as well.
It's interesting because we keep hearing from Fed speakers doubling down on the need for higher for longer interest rates to tamp down inflation. Are you looking for a Fed pivot away from that stance anytime soon?
Not anytime soon. I think the market's perfectly discounted what the Fed has said they're going to do. And I actually think we've probably passed peak hawkishness from the Fed. I think Powell's last press conference and the dots that came out really showed a hawkish Fed. The market totally bought into it. And I don't think there's going to be another move more hawkish than those dots are implying, but I don't think they're going to move away from them quickly either. So if the economy does deteriorate or if there is some sort of systemic risk coming from a geopolitical event or a financial crisis in another country, the Fed will change course. But I think as things stand, they do intend to meet the dots, but I don't think those dots will be revised higher.
Got about 30 seconds left here, Patrick. We keep hearing from more banks raising their odds for the probability of a recession sparked by this Fed. What's your call on that?
Yeah, I think it's probably tipped into likelihood now. So I think UK and Europe, we're in a recession now. In fourth quarter is going to be recession. United States, the employment situation is going to deteriorate. The higher interest rates probably will start to have some impact on employment. And I see the U.S. flirting with a recession. I don't think it'll be significant, but it's definite possibility and probably a slight probability, but I think it'll be shallow.
flirting with recession. We'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, Patrick. Great to get your thoughts. Patrick Armstrong with us this morning, Chief Investment Officer at Pellegrini Wealth. As we take a look at the market slide continuing this morning, we have S&P futures right now down 32 points, Dow futures down 228, NASDAQ futures are lower by 125 points. 10-year Treasury is down 29 32nds now. The yield 3.84%, yield on the 2-year 4.20. NYMEX crude moving a bit lower now, down 0.2% at $81.96 a barrel. And the British pound 1.0839 against the dollar. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine today, upper 60s. We'll have increasing clouds tomorrow, upper 60s. Light rain from Ian moves in Saturday. It's going to be rain all day Sunday as well. 55 degrees currently.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston, Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960 to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Hurricane Ian has weakened to a tropical storm after hitting Florida with a deadly surge of water and catastrophic winds. About 2.3 million homes are without power. We get the very latest on the storm from Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolyn.
Karen and Nathan, Ian tied for the fourth strongest tropical weather system to ever strike the continental United States. It made landfall yesterday in southwestern Florida with winds at 150 miles an hour and an extensive storm surge that caused very significant flooding across portions of southwestern Florida from Naples to Venice. The storm is now well inland, headed into northeastern Florida. Big problem will be wind gusts today in excess of 60 miles an hour and some torrential rain, particularly on the northern side of the system into North Florida. Karen and Nathan.
All right, Rob, thank you. We'll continue checking in with Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolyn throughout the morning here on Bloomberg Radio. Now let's talk markets. The pound is resuming its slide after the Bank of England's emergency bond buying program temporarily soothed concerns. This morning, UK Prime Minister Liz Truss once again defended a giant package of unfunded tax cuts. We are seeing both stocks and bonds in Europe fall this morning.
Well, here in the U.S., Nathan, futures are lower following yesterday's Wall Street rally, which saw the S&P 500 snap a five-day losing streak. Matt Maley is chief market strategist at Miller Tabak.
Although we could get one big washout here in the next few days, I think we're going to see a bounce that lasts for a week or two, or maybe even three. But that will provide another opportunity to raise some cash.
And Miller Tabak chief market strategist Matt Maley said the S&P 500 could go as low as 3,000. It closed just above 3,700 yesterday.
We got some personnel news out of Washington, Karen. Bloomberg News has learned Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen plans to stay on after the November elections. Her desire to stay comes as the Biden administration prepares for potential cabinet and other senior personnel changes.
And in corporate news, Nathan, Amazon is boosting pay for hourly workers in the U.S. The company said the move will raise the average starting wage for most frontline employees in warehousing and transportation to $19 an hour. Futures this morning, again, as we said, are moving lower. S&P futures down 34 points. Dow futures down 240. NASDAQ futures falling down 122. That's down about 1.1%. The DAX in Germany is down 1.2%. The 10-year Treasury down 26 32nds. Yield 3.83%. And the yield on the 2-year, 4.19%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.2% or 15 cents at $82 a barrel. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 5:33 on Wall Street, 54 degrees in Central Park. Heads up, New Jersey transit riders, 20-minute delays on the Northeast Corridor. We'll tell you more in traffic shortly. First, Michael Barr with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Nathan, thank you very much. The New York City Council is deciding whether to ban solitary confinement in jails. Benny Bussico of the Correction Officers Benevolent Association says the notion that we're torturing individuals in our system is not the case. However, Democratic City Council member Tiffany Caban argued we need to know what is the root of the violence.
The ban is opposed by Mayor Eric Adams. It looks like the Senate will pass a bill to fund the government through mid-December. Democratic Representative Jim McGovern of Massachusetts was asked about the odds of the measure passing by Friday.
I believe it will. I believe it will. I mean, I think it'll pass the Senate either today or tomorrow, and then it'll come right to the House. And, you know, and we're prepared to bring it to the floor immediately. And my hope is that after the election, we can, you know, iron out some of the differences and get an omnibus budget passed so that we can have funding for the for all of next year and we can move on.
Representative McGovern spoke on Sound On, which airs weekdays at 5 p.m. on Bloomberg. In a rare show of unity, both parties in the Senate agreed to a temporary continuing spending bill that will include disaster aid for weather-battered Kentucky, Alabama, Texas, Alaska, and Puerto Rico. Vice President Kamala Harris is capping a trip to Asia with a stop at the demilitarized zone dividing the Korean Peninsula. Harris thanked U.S. personnel at the DMZ for their service.
You know how grateful and thankful we are, each one of you, for what you do and what you put into it.
Before going to the DMZ, Harris met with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol and praised the alliance between the countries. One of hip-hop's biggest names has died. Rapper Coolio, with 1990s hits including Gangsta Paradise, died at the Los Angeles home of a friend. The cause was not immediately clear. Grammy winner Coolio was 59. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. He finally did it, John Stansh, Aaron.
Yeah, Nathan, and the symmetry is kind of remarkable. Roger Maris hit 61 home runs in 1961, and now 61 years later, Aaron Judge has joined him, Yankee number 99 with Yankee number 9, only two in American League history with that many home runs.
That's one thing that's so special about the Yankees organization is all the guys that came before us and kind of paved the way and, you know, played the game the right way, did the things the right way, did a lot of great things in this game, and getting the chance to be, you know, mentioned with those guys now is, I can't even describe it. It's incredible honor, that's for sure.
Judge, of course, went seven games without a homer, but seventh inning in Toronto, facing the Blue Jays, Tim Mazza, a liner to left. The ball dropped down into the Blue Jays bullpen, caught by Toronto coach Matt Bushman. Yankee reliever Zach Britton went into the Jays pen, and Toronto's Jordan Romano handed Britton the ball. Britton gave it to Judge, who has seven games left to try and hit number 62 starting tomorrow with Baltimore at the stadium. Yankees beat the Blue Jays 8-3. The Mets, with a huge City Field victory, comes courtesy of Eduardo Escobar. Over the last four innings, Escobar had three hits and drove in all five Met runs as they came back from a 4-0 deficit, beat Miami 5-4 in 10 innings, just as Atlanta lost in 10 at Washington. So the Mets back in sole possession of first, game ahead of the Braves, and now comes the three-game series starting tomorrow, weather permitting, in Atlanta. One Met win in the series means they own the tiebreaker. When the Jets play Sunday in Pittsburgh, Zach Wilson will make his season debut at quarterback, returning from his knee injury. John Stansh, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thanks, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Several states, including New Jersey, have projected a slowdown in sales tax growth in the next fiscal year due to shifts in consumer spending patterns. States are likely to see sharp drops in income tax collections as stock market volatility threatens to wipe out gains in places like New York and California. About 200 union employees at the Central New York Distribution Center for the food supplier Sysco walked off the job Tuesday night. The strike effects applies to local restaurants as well as big institutions like schools, hospitals, and nursing homes. Jet fuel premiums are skyrocketing in New York and Houston as low inventories stoke concerns of a supply pinch. The premiums for barrels of New York Harbor jet fuel has jumped nearly 20-fold since the start of the week. On the Gulf Coast, the premium over futures nearly doubled to the highest in 14 years. At your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk on WFLA Tampa Bay. We're talking about the billions of dollars lost to Florida's tourism industry in the wake of Hurricane Ian.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Oil is heading for its first quarterly decline in more than 2 years.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We've been reporting on Prime Minister Liz Truss saying her plan is the right one for the UK, despite the turmoil on financial markets.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Shipt, the same-day delivery service, is launching an accelerator to support local retailers in Detroit.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Treasury securities play a crucial role in global finance, so it's troubling that the Treasury market has faltered several times over the past decade. The market's challenges stem from a fundamental imbalance. As deficit spending has driven up the U.S. government's debt, the value of publicly traded treasuries has ballooned, far outpacing the financial resources of the large dealer banks that are supposed to facilitate orderly trade in this market. As a result, the dealers are occasionally unable or unwilling to handle the volume of trades that investors want to make. Given that U.S. government debt isn't likely to shrink anytime soon, the best solution is to get more institutions involved. That would relieve pressure on dealers' balance sheets. As of now, most people have no reason to worry about the Treasury market. Let's keep it that way. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. S&P futures are moving lower by 34 points now. Dow futures down 243. NASDAQ futures down 125 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 25, 30 seconds, yield 3.83%. British pound 1.0857 against the dollar. Sam Stovall's with us next on This Market, Chief Investment Strategist at CFRA. Bloomberg 1130 weather, sunshine upper 60s today, increasing high cloudiness tomorrow upper 60s. Light rain moves in from Ian Saturday afternoon, high near 65 with rain on Sunday in the mid 60s. 54 right now.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and this flash brought to you by SEI. Built on advanced technologies and 50 years of innovation, SEI offers asset managers a comprehensive and flexible operations outsourcing platform. Go to SEIC.com/managers. Risk-off sentiment returning to markets as concern about inflation and the risk of global recession overshadows the Bank of England's move to restore calm. The pound snapping a two-day gain, and stocks in U.S. stock index futures are falling as Hong Kong's Hang Seng Tech Index touched its lowest since inception. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 26 points. Dow futures down 178 and NASDAQ futures down 100. The DAX in Germany is down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 26.32, yield 3.83%. The yield on the 2-year 4.20%. NYMEX crude oil is up about 0.2%, now up 12 cents at $82.27 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.7% or $12.50 at $16.57.60 an ounce. The euro, 0.9702 against the dollar. British pound, 1.0881. And the yen, 144.65. Bitcoin is down 0.4% at $19,500. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Floridians are awaiting daylight to see the extent of the damage still being caused by Hurricane Ian. More than 2 million customers across Florida have lost electricity. Ian is now a tropical storm. A new filing by former President Trump's lawyers says that it's not 11,000 documents or pages that were seized by the FBI at the Mar-a-Lago estate. They say it's more like 200,000. Because of that, his attorneys argue they need more time to declare what documents they believe are covered by attorney-client or executive privilege. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Blue Jays 8-3, but more importantly, Aaron Judge hit his 61st home run, tying Roger Maris for the AL record. The Mets, Nationals, and Giants won. The Red Sox beat the Orioles 3-1. The A's lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Sam Stovall is with us now, Chief Investment Strategist at CFRA. Sam, it's great to speak with you, and it's been amazing to see some of the day-to-day moves in the market. We got a 2% jump in the S&P 500 yesterday after the Bank of England announced it was going to go ahead and buy long-dated bonds. Now we're back in selling mode. I know it's probably risky to focus on day-to-day, but what do you make of these jumps and drops in the market each and every day?
Well, they're certainly surprising, because even though September does have a reputation of being volatile, 21% of the trading days in September typically see a 1% move either up or down. But we've had 2.5 times that number this year. And if you think September's bad, just wait till October, because that traditionally sees 36% more volatility than the average for the other 11 months of the year.
So what's driving the volatility right now? Obviously, we've got a lot of turmoil going on in the UK. Is that the focus right now, or is it more about the Fed?
Well, I think it's a combination of items, but the real longer-term worry is whether the U.S. and the globe will be slipping into a recession, and if so, how deeply. History tells us that, yes, we'll probably be in recession here in the U.S. because every time we've had CPI rise above 6.5%, we were at 9.1 in June, we have had a bear market with a recession. So the question is, will it end up being a mild one or a deep one?
What's your call on that? Obviously, we've reached a technical recession with 2 straight quarters of declines in growth. But what do you think is going to happen with the economy?
Well, I think that it will end up at least being a mild one. Our economists are projecting only a 0.1% fourth quarter over fourth quarter gain in GDP this year, and then only eking out a 1.3% move in 2023. But that number has been coming down over the last several periods. So I would tend to say that we fall into probably a mild recession, with the Fed keeping a very close eye on what's going on and possibly responding the way the Bank of England did recently.
Interesting that you would think that perhaps the Fed could make that kind of intervention. There's been a lot of focus, obviously, not just on interest rates, but on the wind down of the balance sheet, some quantitative tightening as well. Are you looking for the possibility that the Fed could start to ease up on the dial back of the balance sheet?
Well, I think it's always a possibility. I mean, when you've already seen a precedent occur overseas, if the financial markets do get out of hand, then the Fed does have to step in. In fact, we're expecting the yield or the Fed funds rate to be peaking by the first quarter of 2023, and then actually see the Fed start to come down in the second half of next year. So while the Fed probably won't be starting and stopping and starting and stopping as it did in the 1970s, we do believe that a year from now, the Fed will be have paused and will probably be working its way toward easing rates to about between 4.5% and 4.75%.
In the meantime, where do you see Treasury yields going at this point?
Well, we have the 10-year yield at 4% for the end of this year, but then coming down to 3.9% by the end of next year. Our feeling also is that the U.S. stock market is likely to continue to be under pressure. The typical bear market accompanied by recession tends to be deeper and last longer than those without recession. Average decline is about 35% over a 15-month period, which would put us to a Fibonacci level of about 3,200 on the S&P, and probably see the market bottom out sometime in the late first quarter of next year.
Got about 30 seconds left here, Sam, but we've seen so much strength in the dollar. It's almost as though investors think there's no alternative to the dollar at this point. How much dollar strength do you think the Fed will tolerate?
Well, we're looking at 10.9% Federal Reserve Board major dollar index increase in 2022. Much of that has already occurred, obviously, but then continued strength into 2023. So I think, again, that's one of the factors that the Fed will be looking at. And if we find that the dollar continues to soar and pretty much strangle demand, whether it's for energy or other products around the globe or puts emerging markets into challenging environments, then I think the Fed probably will look to scale back.
Thanks, Sam. As always, good speaking with you. Sam Stovall of CFRA. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. And it is 5:54 on Wall Street right now. It's time for a legal story we're watching this morning. It brings us to the biggest penalties ever against U.S. banks for record-keeping lapses, more than $2 billion. U.S. regulators reached settlements with a dozen banks in a sprawling investigation into how global financial firms failed to monitor employees' communications on unauthorized messaging apps. For more on the case, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to securities law attorney Robert Heim, a partner at Tarter, Krinsky & Drogan.
This is a stunning amount of fines. What did these banks do that was illegal?
It really is, June. It's a very big announcement from the SEC, and it centers around the bank's failure to preserve electronic communications that their employees engaged in that related to work. And under the federal securities laws, broker-dealers and other regulated entities have obligations to preserve all business-related communications. And what the SEC found was that, according to the settlement papers, there was widespread ignoring of that rule by these 16 firms that settled with the SEC. The SEC categorized their conduct as pervasive. And not only that, it wasn't just regular line employees that were using personal devices for business communications, but it was senior executives, the very people that were responsible for implementing these policies, were also ignoring them.
In some cases, managers even texted with employees in charge of ensuring that banks comply with the law. So it could be that none of these texts were over improper conduct. It was just record keeping?
According to the SEC settlement documents, it really was just record keeping. In some instances, the SEC says that the failure of the firms to preserve the employees' business-related communications hampered their investigations, but they don't really say any specifics about how it was hampered or whether any sort of key evidence was lost as a result of the firm's misconduct. And so it's hard to judge really whether any critical evidence may have been lost, but it just reinforces the SEC's position that proper record keeping as required in the law is something that they're going to take very seriously. And really what this settlement focuses on is employees who in this day and age working remotely, and many firms have bring your own device policies to work. Under the securities laws, firms have an obligation to capture and save any business-related communications, which, you know, can be very challenging in this environment because you have apps like Snapchat that delete messages shortly after they're sent. We have Telegram, we have WhatsApp, and there's many, many different devices, and they often are not very easy to sync with an employer's mainframe computer and standard compliance systems.
And that's Robert Heim, a partner at Tarter, Krinsky & Drogan, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. And this is Bloomberg.